You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Turner Sparks just got married and has moved home to America after 12 years living in China. Sir Michael Ira Kaplan has two kids, a wife, a job, and has spent his entire life in the USA. Neither one can figure their country out. This is Lost in America.
Welcome to Lost in America, episode 80.
Whoa.
My name's Turner Sparks.
I am Mike Kaplan.
You can find me at Turner B Sparks on Twitter. You can find Kaplan at K-A-P, Cap in America.
I almost have 300 followers on Twitter.
So ooh la la.
I'm marching there. I'm at like 280, I think.
Look out, world.
Yeah.
On the podcast today, we have Roseanne Lake. Roseanne is a journalist for The Economist magazine.
And she's a woman, our second straight week. For people who've complained, we've had some people complain we don't have a female guest.
She also has a new book
out. No more men.
She also has a new book out called Leftover in China, The Women Shaping the World's Next Superpower. So she'll be with us in a minute. And if you want to get that book, what do you do, Cap?
You go onto lostinamericapod.com and you click on the link where there's like a little Amazon, like
shows top right hand corner.
Top right corner. Looks like they're selling you something. You click on that, it takes you to Amazon.com and you buy her book.
Exactly.
And anything else you want to buy. So we get some money, she gets some money.
Everybody hits.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a taste. And
we run bookstores out of business. That's what we do too. Let's do that.
Exactly. And you get a book. And we're putting bookstores out of business. Most importantly.
That's importantly.
The mom and pops are gonna be broke.
Yeah.
So before all that, Cap, let's start with Teddy Kaplan news, because we talked a few, was it last week?
Last week, yeah.
Last week we talked on the pod about how he had not won Student of the Month yet, and we were furious.
Yeah, we were very upset, or that you actually try to calm me down by saying it's a good thing if he doesn't win.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It'll build character, work harder on his game, making the bad boy.
Bad boy of the kindergarten.
But, you know, this pod, we drop it on Wednesday, right? It's up. It's already up by Wednesday morning in the walk to school. People are listening to it on the streets of LIC.
Teachers included.
Friday. 2 days go by. Friday, Teddy comes home with a form that's announcing in his folder he brings home from school every day. It's announcing that he's the student of the month for this month, baby.
Yeah, look at us.
It said Theodore Kaplan is the student of the month. This month's value is respect. And I guess that this...
They respect the pot.
They respect the pot. Oh, a little wink, wink. And I guess he exhibits respect. We'll find out how at the ceremony that I'm actually going to miss because I have to work, but...
I want to say thank you to all you listeners who attacked on social media his teacher.
Yeah, he attacked her.
He went after their school. You went after the Long Island City Public School.
And the whole school system. I think you went after the chancellor, the mayor.
We're on the verge of getting the superintendent booted out of the district. So thank you for doing that.
Call for dogs now, guys.
We call our fellow Americans. Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It showed you, really. We can mobilize an army to get things done.
We almost marched.
We almost marched.
Thank you very
much.
We
were more successful than a lot of these marches you hear. So we got, what's next?
Speaking of controversy, we're embroiled, I believe is the word. Is that a word? Embroiled in controversy.
That is a word, yes.
Here at the Lost in America pod. So first of all, we got Teddy Kaplan. He's through, right?
Yeah, that's done. Check.
Next thing.
Next controversy.
Andrea Jones-Roy.
Yes.
Surge in Queens.
An enemy of the people of Yugoslavia. Enemy,
if you don't know what's going on, go back and listen to last week's hate mail right now on, and then come back. Yeah. And now you know. Surge in Queens, one of our listeners. He may also be, he said we had a great live pod. He liked our live pod, but he was upset with Andrea Jones-Roy's episode from a few weeks ago. He attacked her for besmirching the good name of the fine people of Macedonia.
Yeah.
So now we have Andrea Jones-Roy on the line.
Let's get her. Oh, really?
On the phone? She's on the line right now. She's waiting. She wants to respond.
I don't want to be associated with her.
I think I apologize to Macedonia, but I think I'm going to retract. Well, actually, I want to see
Let's hear her defense.
Has to say first. Andrea, how you doing?
What's up, guys? I'm good. How are you?
Good. Well, we're pretty good.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We're doing good. Are you wanting to disclose your location?
I'm an enemy of the state, I understand.
Well, yeah.
No,
first
I certainly
of all,
cannot.
Have you... Yeah, did you listen... Did you hear last week's episode?
I did. Yes. I am aware of what I have done and that I've made a handful of insignificant people very angry.
Whoa.
Wow, the backlash. Doubling down.
Yeah.
On Surge in Queens.
Surge in Queens.
And Surge in Queens...
The people of Yugoslavia.
I invite Surge in Queens to, we can eat in a Greek restaurant and talk about why he thinks Macedonia is so important.
Wow, poking the bear.
So I've been to Macedonia many times. I dated a Macedonian for 1,000 years.
I wonder why you're such angry.
Yeah, and they're fine people. They just don't matter in the international economy. I think Surge needs to accept that.
Wow. So see, I'm of two minds here.
Yeah.
One is I don't want to piss off the Macedonians because they seem like people who are more feisty than me. Like they seem like they could kick my ass.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I'm a free speech person. I don't like I don't like the PC culture we live in, much less from a Macedonian.
Of course. I mean, it's a country that hardly anyone even knows. Like when I first met my ex-boyfriend, I didn't even know what that place was.
Wow.
And most people don't. Yeah. That's why it's such a good example when I'm talking about insignificant things, because now I have a personal reason to know about it.
Wow.
And everyone else is like, oh, yeah, that exists.
See, Surge in Queens, you just picked that out of thin air. No, it's from personal experience.
I would love it if you were to really double down when your next article for 538. Just find a way to work in an insult, a dig at Macedonia. Just turn the knife a little bit and...
Like at the end of every article, no matter what it's about, and be like, by the way, we also still are not interested in what's going on here.
Yes.
I will say, I mean, to start just like, economically, it doesn't matter. Politically, it's an interesting place, and it's hated by a lot of people, and it's at the cornerstone of, not the cornerstone, but it's at the center of a lot of really fucked up atrocities and wars. Like, they've been through some shit.
Andrew, you don't have to start complimenting them now.
Today. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not. Really, there's a source of like a lot of fucking problems. If they just give it up and admit that they're Bulgarian or Greek. Oh man! All right, now we're ending.
Oh wow!
You're calling them Bulgarian.
Yeah.
At every moment, I think you're going to say something nice, and then you go back into the insults. I think the nicest thing you said is so far is that they're hated by the rest of the world, but at least they're not insignificant.
I want to apologize. I have nothing to do with you people.
Oh, Kaplan's backing down to the sponsors.
I'm backing down. We've got a lot of pressure from Delta and others.
We've had a lot of sponsors pulling out recently based off of this. But I don't care. I'm sticking with free speech.
You're sticking with free speech. I'm looking to pick up the sponsors Laura Ingram lost, and they can come over here. We love everybody.
Kaplan, I have one thing to say to you, which is peach gutti mater.
What does that mean?
What is that?
I can't say it in English. It's too offensive. Ask
your mom in Macedonian, Kaplan. That's what my people are telling me. The intern behind the glass.
Oh, Bowie knew that?
All right. Well, I guess that settles it.
Yeah, we have one.
That settles it. Will there be a security detail meeting me? Because I don't feel safe any longer.
Yeah,
not going to.
Where are you? You're going to disclose your location? Have you left the city yet? Or you're...
Let me put it this way. I'm definitely not in North America. How about that?
Okay, good. And do not come to, Astoria. Yeah. I feel like that must be an area of Queens with a lot of Macedonians, so they will recognize your face.
I mean, it's because it's a Greek neighborhood, so of course the Macedonians would cluster there.
Yeah. How do you say fatwa in Greek?
Yeah, because that's going to be put onto you.
Yeah.
A Macedonian fatwa has been declared by Surgeon
Macedonian
Queens.
Macedonian fatwa.
On Andrea Jones-Roy. All right. Well, where can people find you, Andrea?
Non-Macedonians, are welcome to come to any of my shows.
Wow.
I'll be screening at the door.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah, well, they'll recognize me because there'll be a big Greek flag hanging in the entranceway.
This is bad to worse. Bad to worse. All cool. Right, thanks, Andrea.
All right, a pleasure as always.
Talk to you soon.
See you guys. Bye.
Wow. So that's...
Wow.
I didn't know what tax she was going to take there.
She didn't give an inch.
And she did not. She's principled.
I don't know how long she has to live. But she's going to die for her principle, which is that Macedonia sucks, I guess.
Yeah, she went in like a good stubborn person. She went into that interview. I don't think that was her principle.
Yeah, I don't think it was.
I create principles all the time that way. Where I say something that offends someone, and I'm like, I'm not going to back. Now I believe in this thing.
Now
I'm just living in the moment. I hate Macedonians. Yeah. She hates, you know, so she can be persona non grata. I can't wait till Nate Silver tries to send her on an assignment out there, and she gets detained at the airport. But...
We'll see what happens. We will see what happens. But if you want to see me, I will be May 6th at the Yonkers Comedy Club. Yonkers.
Oh.
Where's that?
Yonkers is like, it's like its own part of New York. I don't, you ever see like Lost in Yonkers? You ever hear that? No? It's like.
Lost in America?
Lost in America. Yeah. There's
Lost in Yonkers.
Is that ever a thing I just made up? I think it's a play. But Yonkers is a part of New York, and all I know is I just file my taxes. And one of the last things they do is they ask you if you're a Yonkers resident. You pay some extra tax.
Oh.
I have no idea why.
Well, I'm not a resident. I'm just going to the comedy club.
They pay a different tax than the rest of New York City. It's part of New York City, I think.
I will be in Yonkers, New York on May 6th at the Yonkers Comedy Club. May 18th, back to Philadelphia, the home of champions.
Yes.
Philly Comedy. Philly Comedy Club. Myself and Jeremy Pinsley from the Drinking Pod are going to be headlining there together.
Joel Embiid might stomp by.
Then I will be at the China International Comedy Festival, judging the festival and headlining the festival May 21st through the 28th in Shanghai. China International Comedy Festival. Then it will be at the Mary Lyon Comedy Club in Singapore, June 1st and 2nd. Coming out to those. All right, Cap.
Yeah.
Should we get to Lost in America?
Play the music.
Play the music. Kaplan, love the music. De'Aaron Roots, shout out. Congratulations. The end of tax season for De'Aaron Roots.
People have filed. If you haven't filed your taxes, listeners, you better, I don't know, stop listening and file right now.
Exactly.
But the man's the best, the most punk rock accountant on the planet.
Yes.
That's how you call him. Thank you for the tunes.
Kaplan, I'm lost in America this week, and I'll tell you why. As we know, I'm a comedian. If you don't know that and you've listened to this, fucking listen again. I'm a comedian.
Listen to the intro.
I tour around the world doing comedy. There's a stark difference in the way that people around the world treat me as a comedian versus American people when I tell them I'm a comedian. I'll give you an example.
Yes.
When I'm around the world, you say anywhere. I am in Mexico doing comedy. I'm in China. I'm in Japan. I'm in Korea. How we go? Oh, this is my friend Turner. He's a comedian. Oh, you're a comedian? Ooh, that's amazing. End of conversation.
Ooh, they say woo in every language.
Ooh, in English, everyone does too. If I say that now, the same exact conversation in the United States of America, they go, "Hey, this is my friend Turner. He's a comedian." Oh, you're a comedian? Do not make a joke about me. Are you joking about this? What I'm doing right now? Americans, we have this attitude. Is it self-centered, or is it confidence, or is it that my life is so important and so interesting that you as a comedian just looking at me are obviously writing some bit that you're going to do about me at a later date?
Well, I think Americans...
Defend your country.
Defend my country.
Kaplan.
I mean, they're engaging with you. I think Americans, you know, when they go to the comedy club probably like to be ripped on, right?
Yes.
They have more of a, they understand that everyone likes to be the heckler.
Yeah, but this doesn't have to, this is not at a comedy club. Well, this is at a dinner party. This is sitting at a table. Literally everyone says, oh my God, you better not joke about me. Like, and what they're implying is that they're so amazing. Like, okay, what am I going to joke about? That you're just sitting there eating a steak?
You're kind of ripping on them now. You're riffing on them. Wanting you to make jokes about them.
Oh, God.
So they've gotten their wish. They've gotten you, the Americans. Is it that, do Americans, though, have a different reaction as far as, like, what, as a career choice? Like, once you get deeper, or is it just...
I think it's that we as Americans, myself included, we think the world revolves around us. That's why every American has a podcast.
Exactly.
Shout out.
It does revolve around us.
Everyone thinks the world revolves around them.
Everybody knows someone with a podcast or who's a comedian or a writer.
Everyone's so important that it's, of course, you must be drawing your material from me directly. The other thing that people say,
yes.
So there's one of two options, sometimes both. The other thing they say, after they say, oh my gosh, don't write a joke about me. The other example is they would say, oh, you're a comedian? My friends tell me I should be a comedian.
Oh my God.
I'm so
funny.
Only
Americans do that? They don't do that in other countries?
No, they don't do that in other countries. All they do in other countries is they politely go, wow, that sounds great. Good for you. You're a comedian. I'm an engineer. Yeah, I don't sit there and go, oh my God, you're an engineer? Don't start designing a building based off of how I look.
Well, because in other countries, they're not raised to think they could be a comedian. So
yeah, I know. There's something about America.
They're raised to be practical.
I don't know about
America. We could do anything we want. So it worked out for you because you're a comedian.
It did work out for me.
You might be an engineer if you're in another country.
You're right. You're
right. You might be in a sweatshop.
But one believes. I think we're raised to believe we can do anything we want as long as it doesn't take effort. And there's this idea that maybe stand-up doesn't take... Because no one thinks they can just be an engineer. You know what I mean?
True.
Or an accountant. Shout out Darren Rude. Shout out Gary Sparks.
I don't think I could be an engineer, but I think I could do a podcast about being an engineer. Because I'm such a great podcaster.
When I was at my college graduation, University of Miami, we had a... architectural critic was the speaker. He was the speaker of our graduation.
That's a deep dive there.
Because they had to combine the architecture school and the journalism school.
Wait, where this was high school? Is it
University of Miami?
Oh, okay.
Carl Gables, Florida.
So wait.
So this guy was he wasn't an architect. He never built a building. He just looked at buildings and went, "That one sucks."
Wait, your journalism school doesn't get their own speaker? They have to share with the art.
Yeah, we had to share with the architecture school. I don't know. This may be before the $3 billion endowment
came
in.
That's why Syracuse has a better journalism program.
They couldn't
afford
it. We
get Ted Koppel. We don't get... I can't even name it. My only architect I can name is Art Vandelay. So
I can't name any. I am Pei. That's the one I know.
A friend of the pod.
So anyway, I don't know. So you have no answer for why Americans... I think it's a self-centeredness. And then also... But I mean, self-centered's at some point also good. Like it said, I can do anything, as you said. There's a positive spin to it.
I mean, we've discussed before in a lot of these countries that being a comedian is kind of a new concept. Comedy's new.
True. Oh, you mean the idea of my friends tell me I should be a comedian.
Yeah, comes from the fact that Americans have grown up like...
We've grown up watching Seinfeld, he's a comedian.
Every town, there's like some sort of place to do comedy. So people know people who do comedy.
But I think it's also...
And they think, that person's not so great, so I could be a comedian.
If you've ever told a joke once in your life, then you just think you're a comedian. There's also that any teacher, anytime you tell this to a teacher, they go, oh, my job's it's pretty much like being a comedian. I entertain these students all day. It's like, but if they don't laugh at your joke, they get detention.
Yeah, that's what you need. If you could give grades to the audience, based on how they laugh.
Then we're equals.
Then you could,
beyond that, I'm better than you.
Yeah, if they give you an apple.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works, but.
All right.
Still give apples? Teachers? No.
You're the one with kids. I have no idea.
I don't know, yeah.
I think you need more of a bribe these days for teachers.
Yeah.
They can't survive on apples alone, because God knows they don't get paid enough.
No.
I'm pro-teacher. Ince is an app.
It is an app.
You can get it in the App Store. It's up to 5-minute audio recordings of your choice, Kaplan.
My
it can
choice.
Also be, don't think of it necessarily only as recording. Sometimes it's just communication. It's talking to your friends, right? You want to schedule your next pod? You call Bowie. Bowie tells you when the studio's available. Never is the answer we got this week. Yeah. So now we're at a super secret location, as we mentioned earlier.
In a closet somewhere, but where this thing, the paint can's going to fall on my head.
Exactly.
But I've noticed that the people are really loving the private feature in Ents, which I talked about. We have a lot of fans have been Enting me this week. I'm getting a lot of private Ents.
A lot of
they
private
don't, you know, they're saying things that they're from the heart, I guess. They don't want the world to know about it. But that's an option when you're Enting, tell one person something.
Exactly.
Give your thoughts.
Yeah, you can just get in touch with your friends and schedule. Or you can group Ents, I believe. Yeah, you can group like three or four friends together.
Yeah.
Hey.
It's always better with a group.
It's always better with a group. How do you spell Ents?
Starts with an E.
What is it? What's next?
Then we got an N.
Yes.
Then we got an S.
I believe you're
then
right.
Then we got an E.
Correct.
And that's a simple word to spell, Ents. So simple that I think it should be on spelling tests for kindergartners.
I'm
it's like a nice four-letter.
E-N-S-E, ents.nyc. Get it. All right, let's get to our guest, Roseanne Lake. Roseanne, come on in.
Come on in if you can find us.
We'll be right back.
spectacular guest, Roseanne Lake. Roseanne, welcome to the super secret location. We cannot say where we are.
All right, we will not say. I'll just say it's pretty spectacular.
But you found it.
I found it.
Yeah. So, okay, you have this book, which we're going to talk about, but I want to start with you moved. When did you move to China?
2009.
Okay, why did you move to China?
Well, China was having like a big coming out party, I think. It was right after the Olympics.
China's gay.
And
that's what I'm saying.
God. Yeah. Don't worry. Yeah.
That's the next book.
I hesitated some hot water. Before I said that.
Gay
but
China.
I figured you'd know what I meant. it was just, I don't know, the whole world was kind of paying attention and I really wanted to learn Mandarin. And I just graduated from, you know, grad school and journalism, and the choices are, you know, you stick around New York City and you get coffee for a bunch of obnoxious people, or you go to China and you pick up some Mandarin and you make yourself a bit more exotic and you pitch to editors and, you know, life is perhaps a bit more interesting. So that's what happened. I would say
the blonde hair specifically exotic in China, right?
Not so much in Beijing, but yeah, more
really?
So than here.
A lot of blondes?
Well, it's foreign. Beijing. For sure.
Oh, yeah. More foreigners.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just remember, like, I could skate by a lot, but anyone I knew who was blonde would get way more attention, I would say. Way more attention than me.
I had a friend visit. So one of the first things I did when I arrived was buy a hot orange electric scooter named Fanta. So to make myself a little bit more inconspicuous, you know, I bought this hot orange.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would ride around it all the time and it seemed pretty fine until a friend of mine from college came to visit who was also blonde. And when the two of us were on this thing, it was like, everyone was like, "Wow, neither Jeje Lala." Like, yeah. You know, your sister came and suddenly we were getting tons of attention. When it was just me, yeah, it was fine. Business as usual.
Okay.
I was usually pretty bundled up. You know, Beijing gets cold.
That's true.
You have a scooter, Turner?
I did. The first year I was there, I had a scooter. My boss, it was a signing bonus for going to work at the school I taught at.
Wow.
Because there was like a few schools that all wanted me because I was living in Suzhou.
Highly recruited.
2004, Suzhou. Yeah. So I was like a top five
You
pick.
Also didn't want to get coffee for obnoxious people.
Exactly.
2004, so you said, I'm moving to China. Those are my two choices, apparently. I didn't know. I chose the coffee for obnoxious people.
Kavlin,
I moved to LA after
for obnoxious people.
I was doing that. I'm still doing that. But
you got us this amazing secret location, so, you know.
Yeah.
It all pays off somewhere.
Yeah.
I got a scooter. It was, so the boss was like, if you sign with us, we'll get you a scooter. But then I taught for them for a year and like 9 months into it, my boss, we did not get along at all. And so I just left the scooter on the street because I knew he was going to try to make me return it at the end of the year. So I just left it on the street for 3 months. It took 3 months for it to get stolen.
Whoa.
And then it did, and then I didn't have to give back to him.
You put a bike lock on it or something?
No, because I wanted to get rid of it.
And no one took it for 3 months?
So I wouldn't have to give it back to him.
That would have taken 3 days in Beijing. Suzhou must be a much safer place.
Yeah. I guess so, yeah. So Beijing in 2009, what did you go there? Did you go there to... did you have a job? Like, were you a journalist?
Yes, I was working for the party, essentially. I was working for the Beijing Review. It's a publication under the Ministry of Propaganda, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It was not a very exciting publication, but that's sort of what took me there. And I was only planning on staying for a little bit. And actually, I stayed 20 days. The people that I was working with had a very serious plagiarism problem. And, you know, they would plagiarize from a whole bunch of different sources, but it was just like, guys, you know, this is problematic. You can't just rehash the New York Times or National Geographic and expect that I'm not going to know.
National Geographic?
Do they go,
yes.
But they don't have a, do they go to journalism school?
Or
they just like,
I mean, this was, you know, these are those iron rice bowl jobs, right? So you're there for life. There's not too much incentive to go and be above and beyond the call of duty,
right.
Which apparently didn't matter. And, you know, the editor who was above me was a South African guy, and he also didn't seem to think that
oh,
this
he didn't
was
care?
A problem. No, so when just I raised it to him, you know, he was just kind of like, yeah, well, this is what happens. And I'm like, I can't.
As long as you're not saying anything bad about apartheid, I'm fine.
This paper took a strong... So what were you covering for the paper?
It was a China Africa publication.
Oh,
so you were covering apartheid.
And all the benefits.
Yes.
But I lasted 20 days. I mean, I was looking after the French edition and the English edition, and both were equally, borrowed. So I just decided, I can't stick around.
Were you right out of journalism school?
I was, yeah.
That's so funny.
Optimistic.
I went to journalism school at University of Miami, and I also, right when I got there, I worked at the Suzhou, whatever newspaper, Suzhou Daily. But yeah, it's exact, like they tell you in school, right? They're like, oh, you get all this like super ideal. Like they didn't even want to mix, I think our like school paper, you couldn't mix advertising department and the journalism department. But then any like small magazine, sometimes they just have to because it's like one person who does it all. And then you get over to China and they're like, oh no, our job is just to do whatever Like journalism is thought of as,
and all of this.
It's extending the idea of the party, right?
Yeah. I mean, for those sorts of publications, for sure. Yeah.
So that was the Beijing Review?
Yeah.
Reviewing not a lot.
Not too much. China,
and so
Africa,
you quit, and then you came back to America?
No, are you kidding me? I was already enterprising little me. I had already gotten a job as the property correspondent for Time Out. And so I was covering the crazy, the dizzyingly high, you know, well, real estate development and just prices around Beijing. And somebody from a television network called me and said, hey, can we have you on a show to talk about, you know, the property market in China? And I was like, well, I'm pretty new, but if you tell me what you want me to cover, I'll do my homework and I'll be on your show. So that's what happened. I was on the show and it was a new channel called BON. And right after I was on the show, they were like, hey, we're hiring. Do you want to, you know, be a host on the show? And I was like, actually, that's great because I need a job and I have this scooter I need to support. I want to stay in China. And
so, the scooter payments.
Scooter payments.
Yeah, the scooter is actually paid for, but I wanted to keep riding
insurance.
It. It was like
scooter insurance.
Riding a scooter on Beijing is like outdoor theater. You know, it's just like, it's like being in the movies all the time. You zip around, you see something weird happen, you park your bike and you kind of just watch. That's what I did all the time. It was, I mean, I didn't speak the language. It was a fascinating place. You had, like, you know, people delivering bai tai white cabbage on your right, and then you had these like high rises going up on your left. It was just way too interesting to want to leave. So essentially, you know, whatever opportunity I could have to stay that didn't compromise my journalistic principles was a reason enough to stay.
But you said you went there because you want to serve coffee, but why'd you, that's why you would go, that's why you would leave America, but why'd you pick China specifically?
I wanted to learn Mandarin. And
oh, you did?
Yeah. Okay. And you know, China seemed like it was a place that was growing in world importance, right? I grew up speaking Spanish. I'm half Spanish. And I studied French and Italian in college. So Romance languages came pretty easily. And I wanted like a real linguistic challenge. And China seemed like a pretty good option. In addition to the fact that just from a news perspective, it was becoming increasingly important.
I guess 2009 it was, right?
It was right after the Olympics.
They had the peak of Mr. Softy sales, I think.
Exactly. That's really when we were really, we were kicking ass.
It was a great time to be in China.
It was the heyday.
It's a heyday. So yeah, peak.
Okay. And so then, because now you work with The Economist. So how do you go from
Time Out Beijing?
Yeah, Time Out Beijing. Like, what's the move? You know what I mean?
I actually have a colleague who I really admire who started off at Time Out, I don't know, 30 years ago and has now been at The Economist forever. Apparently, it's a very common trajectory.
But it's one to the other? Is that what you did?
No, not quite. I mean, in the meantime,
some miners to
scooter into their office.
No, I mean, I was in China for 5 years. So I freelanced for a bunch of publications in the U.S. And it was also there that I got the book idea. Worked on all of those things. And then, I don't know, I guess cleaned up enough for The Economist to want me.
When you were at Time Out, could you write whatever you wanted, or was that controlled
as well? Yeah, I mean, I was writing the property beat, so it wasn't anything tremendously sensitive. It was like introducing new neighborhoods and talking about prices and, you know, distance from the subway and, you know, new compounds that were going up. It wasn't anything highly controversial.
Did they come? Because I think there's a thought that, like, everything is controlled to the same degree in China in terms of journalism, but that's probably not the case, right?
No, I mean, a publication like the Beijing Review kind of has pretty clear marching orders in terms of what they're supposed to be covering. Of course, there are people on staff that would, you know, pitch stories, but everything kind of goes through a lot more of a rigorous check before it gets published. I think for a publication like Time Out or, you know, other foreign outlets, it's the checking process before something comes out isn't as thorough. It's after it comes out, if you've done something wrong, you might get a talking to, but it goes the other way around. For a state publication, it's like it doesn't even have the chance to come out. That's going to get filtered before.
So did you find yourself self-censoring? Or does anyone do that, just in case?
Time Out, or?
Just anywhere.
Yeah, it's a talking to.
Because I know in stand-up we did. Yeah. Like, you would, doing comedy in China, you would say, like, well, let's just not, like, no one really talk Chinese politics. No one talk Chinese politics on stage because we thought, like, well, if we do that, because we'd built this whole community, this whole, like, thing, and then if you do that, it could risk, like, everything getting shut down.
Right.
So we just didn't. Like, right. We just stayed away from...
Missed a lot of opportunities.
That whole career I could have had doing
so much
specific
tea.
Chinese politics comedy around the world.
Could have been the John Oliver.
What's the deal with the John Oliver?
You could have had some good times
probably
there.
Probably wouldn't have lasted long.
And it just wasn't what I was interested in. I wasn't...
That's the thing. I mean, I think it comes down to that. If I were, you know, if I were fascinated by the Communist Party and wanted to constantly write about them, I'd probably run into more issues. But I'm not. Like, it didn't end up being, you know, it didn't intersect too much with what I ended up covering. So I didn't really usually have any issues, which is disappointing. Yeah. You'd like to think, you know, I'm not even important enough to be on their radar. They leave me alone.
Yeah, you've and really also made it be like, as a journalist. Actually,
I haven't made it.
The quickest way to fail at like a TV show or anything is when you're trying, you try to start talking about like whoever the governor is of some province. Like, no one's ever heard of them. Yeah. You know what I mean? You can't do... Right. You can't even bring anyone,
specific humor.
Anyone below the president in China, people just don't know. Mm. I don't think anyone would know, right? Right.
Well, if it's a juicy enough story, I guess people don't need to know the person. But I don't know.
I'm not sure. You know, I don't. Did you find that people you knew were talking politics every day in the street and at dinner?
Definitely not. I mean, people in China, they like to make money. They like to talk about, you know, what they can buy with it. It's politics. No, aside from like a small circle that is, you know, very, very political. No, it doesn't come up.
I guess everyday, in Beijing, maybe more.
You're
Lao
Baixin. Nah, it doesn't come up.
Yeah.
No. Although, I mean, since we're talking politics, I always secretly wanted to write a play or some sort of a novel about Bo Xilai's son, Bo Guoqua, and Xi Jinping's daughter, who were, I think, at Harvard at the same time, falling in love and having some crazy story.
Did they really?
No.
Wait, Kev, do you know this story?
I don't know.
Okay. It's
really speaking French.
I'm going to explain it quickly.
All right.
Okay, so Bo Xilai was, think of him as like the John McCain. I could be slightly, like, not politically, but that important of a person in Chinese
was
politics.
Was he a war hero? No.
This is very recent. Oh. This is like, what, 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, when Xi Jinping took power.
He wasn't the president, but he had a chance of becoming the president. He was one of like the top group of people who might become the next president of China. And it was him versus this guy, Xi Jinping, who now is the president. Now for life. Shout out. And so we all hail our great leader.
Yes.
Our overlord. And so he, let's see what happened. His wife, okay, back to Bo Xilai.
Bo Xilai.
When it seemed like John McCain. When it seemed like he might become the president, his wife killed a British businessman.
Neil Hayward.
Intentionally?
R.I.P. Yeah.
R.I.P. Yeah, yeah. Oh, intentionally. No, what do you mean?
She hit him in her car or something. Well,
it may have been the maid, but she probably put her.
Wait, how'd she kill him?
Oh, correct me if I'm wrong any of this, because I'm remembering slightly and I'm just going. Same. So she killed him by poisoning, right?
Yeah.
She the old fashioned way.
In England? Like, or in China?
No!
Arsenic.
Oh. In China. He was
it? Because she was having an affair with him?
No. Yeah. No, potentially or no?
No, there were some. I think she had business deals going on that she probably wasn't supposed to be having given who her husband was.
Oh.
He was the mayor of Chongqing, I believe.
Yeah, he was the mayor of like this, the biggest city in quotation marks in the world.
So he was more like Rudy Giuliani or someone of China, but no, big
no, way more powerful.
Well, like the biggest mayor.
You're very New York. This is a New York Weber of you. Yeah. In New York City, how important Giuliani is.
Yeah, or was, but yeah. For Bloomberg, let's say Miriam,
for America,
she was the mayor of Bloomberg. And then so she killed. So what happened?
No, way more powerful.
Okay.
Anyway. So then she went to jail for life, right?
No one really knows where she is, but that was the, those were the headlines, I believe.
And then did he go to prison or did he got kicked out of politics?
Yeah,
So he lost his career? Did he have nothing to do with the murder though?
No, he lost his career, sure.
Yeah. How do they know he had
anything to do with him? Unclear if he had anything to do with the murder, right?
Unclear, yeah.
And is it clear if she was having an affair with this guy?
No, that was also unclear.
This podcast, yes.
But what was your novel going to be? Who was she at Harvard with at the same time? Or who was at Harvard together?
So her son and Xi Jinping's daughter. So basically the two top
rivals.
Contenders.
Oh.
The rivals for...
This is a great book idea.
So you're saying if Meghan McCain...
You heard it here first.
Wait, I'm trying to think of... If Ivanka... Oh wait, what's a Trump... I'm trying to think of a political son.
It would be like if a Clinton... I mean, if that was possible. If
Clinton and Trump are friends. Hillary, what's her face? Ivanka...
If Eric Trump and... Sasha, no.
It would have to be one imprison the other.
It would have to be a Trump and one of Obama's daughters. Yeah, but it's still
that would
not
blow
the same
everyone's mind.
No, but only if Trump put Michelle Obama in prison.
Well, don't give me ideas.
Yeah,
killing someone.
There were a lot of degrees. Yeah,
it was nuts.
Well, Hillary Clinton. No, what was that? No,
pizza thing. So you didn't write about that at all, did you?
No. But I'm just saying, when you were talking politics earlier, I was like, that's the closest. That's the only temptation I had to, like, do something fantastical there around that.
I bought a book about that, but you couldn't buy it. I bought it in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You could buy it there. It
was very sensitive.
In mainland China, you could not.
So we're going to have to cut all that out from the Chinese version of this podcast. Recently.
Yeah, but whatever. We'll be fine.
Okay.
So how did you get to this idea for writing this book? Was that...
This book, I was surrounded by. So the book's called Leftover in China, and it's about leftover women, right? Women who have rather brazenly transgressed their sell-by date of 25 or 27 or 30 to get married. So I'm talking about, you know, women who aren't getting married when everyone else is telling them they're supposed to.
So society tells them to get married at 25, 26, 27.
In China, they get married. That's the average age or so, about 20.
It's actually not the average age. The average age is a bit higher than that, but this is kind of what society is saying.
Right.
And the reason is, you know, women in China are still largely defined by a biological definition, and they believe that, you know, kind of after 27 your babies are going to come out funky, so if you don't have a kid by then, you know, you're the chances of parents being able to, you know, swaddle those really healthy wrapped up babies, you know, lots of layers of blankets and all that stuff like they like doing, decrease, right? So they kind of usher everyone into marriage as quickly as possible.
But what's crazy, like I used to teach some high school kids, they couldn't date in high school,
right? Or
Chinese
in college
kids. Or in college.
Nope.
So the window is tiny.
There is no window.
You have to
you graduate and you get married.
You start dating.
No birth control.
22.
Obviously.
Yeah, and then you just go Mormon style.
Right.
No birth control. And then you have kids and then you're done.
Because they're having sex before marriage. Is that frowned upon?
If it's not frowned upon. I mean, you obviously don't advertise it, right. But, you know, it's things have definitely changed.
There's no religious factor to that. There's no God.
I think more than anything, it's a matter of space. Like, I've spoken to women who are like, I was desperate to lose my virginity and I could not find a place to do it.
Oh, because they live with their parents.
Because China is crowded. Right. It is crowded. One of the characters in my book was so desperate to do it, she couldn't manage to do it until she went to Sweden as an exchange student. And before she went, she actually went to Yonghegong Temple and prayed that she would be able to lose it somewhere in China, but she just couldn't. She's like, it's a crowded place. There's no, you know, there's not.
There's always
finding a space for a podcast. It's hard.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah.
I remember I would see couples getting very, like spending all day just like holding each other in a park.
Yeah.
That
along
would be
the
a big date.
Babies aren't made that way.
Just like eight hours in the park, just sitting there.
Spooning, a lot of spooning in public.
Yeah, a lot of spooning and then just like staring into the distance.
Yeah,
they don't have cars. Oh, no,
the Yamaha Canal was pretty popular for that. People would hang out there all day. Downtown Beijing, near Liangwechao.
Oh, yeah, that was their makeout point.
That was in the evenings, like you'd hear weird noises in the bushes. It was, in the bushes.
You should have rented out the softy fan when it was off duty.
That's a good idea.
Make some bucks.
So you knew so you had a lot of friends like this?
So I had a lot of colleagues who were in this situation, and I had no idea. Like, I would go to work, and I was kind of struck by the fact that these women were kind of in charge at the studio, right? They were the editors, the producers. They were kind of calling the shots. And all the men I work with kind of just worked the cameras. And, you know, being new to China, I was kind of surprised. Like, wow, these women are, you know, in charge here. And they were just, you know, colleagues, and we worked together. And it wasn't until after my first Chinese New Year that I get back to the office and things are kind of, you know, they're in decidedly different spirits. No one's as cheerful as they usually are. And I'm thinking, is there something wrong with the company? You know, it was a new company. I didn't know if people are getting laid off, what the issue was. And I went to see sort of one of the higher ups, and she was like, oh, they're just upset because they're not married. And I'm like,
it's amazing.
They're like 23, 24. Like, is the Communist Party giving away free holidays to the Maldives or something? Like, what? For honeymoons? Right? What is going on? And she kind of just shut the door in a very sort of pragmatic, like, she said this as, like, frankly, as she would say, like, no, there is no toilet paper today.
Right.
Like,
yeah. It was just obvious. Everyone knows why.
Yeah. And so I went back and I started, you know, kind of asking around, and people were pretty mum on the subject. But finally, I got one of my colleagues, Shan Shan, to open up. And she explained that she'd just come back from her Laojia, you know, from her hometown, with this fresh lacquering of marriage pressure. And it didn't matter that she was in Beijing, that she was supporting herself, that she was bilingual, that she had a master's degree, that she was working for an international network. None of that mattered because she wasn't married.
Yeah.
And like, her parents, her grandparents, her relatives, taxi drivers, her former classmates, they couldn't get
taxi
over
drivers. Whoa. I'm gonna stop this car right now. Yeah.
You need to get married.
You're not married? We're going to the
Please,
chapel.
The impropriety.
We're going to the park.
Exactly.
We're gonna find you.
We're going to People's Park.
We're
right
rustle
now.
Those bushes.
Those markets, the setup markets? Or...
Yeah.
What about those?
Tiantan Gongyan in Beijing.
We've talked about those.
People's Park in Shanghai. Yeah. Taxi driver makes a U-turn and
takes him right there and is like, I'm gonna
be 23. It is time to get married. So you're just supposed to marry the first person you see, basically?
Not necessarily. I mean, what I guess the difference with places like India, where marriages are flat out arranged, is you get a choice here. And one of the things that I found so entertaining was, you know, you'd have women in their mid-30s, sometimes early 40s, and their parents hadn't given up yet. And they saw it as their mission as parents to sort of present them with a constant parade of men to choose from. And sometimes, you know, women would dismiss these men like, oh, he's a PhD. They're dorky. Jackie, I can't handle them. And they just kind of wave the guy away. Yeah, and I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, you know, in some cases, yes, I will sympathize with this ridiculous pressure you get starting at age 23. But in other cases, you know, when it gets to 40 and they're still presenting you with constant men, it's like, well, do you want this or do you not want this? Because, yeah. you know, I would say, you know, it's pretty kind of your parents to still be doing this for you.
Just keep going.
It's interesting because it's like the pressure is to get married. Like, I feel like in America, like, I mean, I'm Jewish. And it's a stereotype, but it's a little bit true of like, you're very much pressured to like marry someone Jewish, right?
Right.
And then there's like also pressure on women that like, oh, you got to get married when you're young because, but it's unspoken that like, because you want to find someone who's rich or good looking. And like, if you wait too long, you'll be stuck with me or something. But like, you know, so, but they're not, there's not this panic that you won't get married at all. Unless, like, maybe in extreme circumstances.
Is there? When's the last time you chatted with a Jewish mom?
Oh, yes. I meant as America overall.
Oh, overall. So, No.
But yes, as Jews, yes, there's a... we can relate to this.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. A lot of Chinese moms, I feel like, sound like Jewish moms. I don't have a Jewish mom. I'm not Jewish, but I know a lot of them. And it's I've watched enough episodes of The Nanny to kind of get
it. Yes, that's exactly how it is.
Was there anything they had to marry a Chinese person? That doesn't seem to matter, right?
No, that doesn't come. I think it's kind of just assumed that they will.
Yeah, I mean it's like 99.99%.
Right. This is no, like,
exactly.
I mean, guess you could marry an expat, you know, this guy. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you could, and some parents look favorably upon it, and some are freaked out about it. But, you know, overall, it's as long as you're married. That's kind of
I went to a wedding one time, and the husband, the groom was American, and the wife was Chinese. And the wife's dad gave a speech at the wedding, and he goes, initially, when we found out our daughter was dating this guy, we were very happy because he's American, and Americans are rich. And then everyone claps, like the 300 people at the wedding all claps. And then he goes, but
he's not.
We found out he is not rich. And everyone went, oh. And they go, but we learned to love him anyway.
Oh my God.
Thank you, good night. That was the end. That was like the whole speech.
That is a great speech. To the point.
You have to love how honest he was.
Yeah, very honest. Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so then, like, did you just pick the women from your office? And, like, I'm going to write a book about you?
I mean, they were kind of the test group, right? Like, I was like, wow, this is pretty outrageous. Why? You know, why? First of all, why do you have so much pressure? And at the time, like, I was still pretty new to China, but I knew that there were more men than women in China.
Yeah.
So I was like,
Seems easy.
Yeah, it seems easy. Even if, you know, you're facing this gruesome pressure, why don't you just get a guy, bring him home for the holidays, and then, you know, call it quits after that? Like, avoid yourself the trauma of
the
going
old
home
stall.
Without someone. Yeah, oh, why don't you do that? And I kind of got blank stares. It's like, these women weren't dating. They weren't like, it was like, where were these men? Right. And it was kind of, I mean, I wasn't writing a book at the time, but I was just kind of curious. I was new to China. I wanted to understand, I guess, the younger generations. It was an easy sort of entry point for me, someone who was, you know, still very far into this place. And it was like, I kind of, you know, wanted to figure out, well, I knew at the time there were 20 million more men. There were going to be 20 million more men of marriage age than women by the year 2020. That was a Chinese Academy of Social Sciences stat that was already out. So it's like, well, where are these men? How can I find them? And so, yeah, I guess the journalist in me kind of took over, and I started to try to figure out, well, why are these women having such a hard time dating? And, you know, why is it such a big deal that they get married by such a young age? And the answer as to where the men were, I remember at the time I was thinking, like, wow, you know, so many more men. I could maybe like pitch this to Marie Claire or some women's magazine as like the untapped oasis for dating.
Totally.
And that was the first thought. And then, you know, I did a bit of digging and I realized, well, wait a minute, you know, China had a one-child policy and there's been a gender imbalance as a result of it, which has led to this surplus of men. But where are they? A lot of these men are in rural areas of China, in the countryside, where parents were more keen to have a son. Whereas in urban areas, you had, you know, parents who were a bit more open-minded. And it's like, well, we're having a girl. We'll just keep a girl. She doesn't have a brother. So we're just going to raise her as if she were our son, right? We're going to push her to study and to succeed and to bring honor to our family as if she were our only heir, because she is. And so what I saw was everything started to fall into place. A lot of my colleagues were only daughters and, you know, they'd been raised as if they were sons, and a lot of the men that they were supposed to be dating, I mean, a lot of these surplus men were locked up in their rural areas of the country where, you know, they were poor, they were uneducated, and they probably weren't going to cross paths with these women because they were still living on farms. So that started to explain
why. So does that mean that in cities it's actually more balanced?
In cities, it is more balanced. So if you look at demographic data in China, sort of from 1979 going forward, you see that there is an imbalance. But in places, top-tier cities like Beijing and Shanghai, that imbalance rarely exceeds 100 to 115. So for every 100 girls, there are about 115 boys, which is unnatural. In nature, it's usually 100 to 106. There are usually some more boys born than girls, oh, just really? Generally.
I thought there was more girls. Nature.
Yeah, yeah. No, more boys. So you have that. But if you go way, way out into the provinces, you see that climb to, you know, 120, 130, 140, 150, 150, 170. Wow. It gets really high.
So what we need to do is start a like a tour system. Where you go out to the bus out to the province, go right. meet guys.
Bachelor villages. Right.
Yeah.
Instead of speed dating, like,
speed dating. On like what? Weekend in the province.
Also, we need to train the guys out there. We're going to go out there and train them to be more city like.
Oh, you guys would be perfect.
You know, yeah, teach that's them, a good idea. We'll take the pot on the road.
Teach them a little bit of education. Great bit, yes. Teach them how to talk to girls. Yeah. You'll translate.
Book your tickets to Guangxi.
We'll do dance
now.
Classes and drink orders.
Yeah, exactly.
So where do people meet? Because I always, first of all, it's not, I mean, I know from experience, no one, at least until recently, no one's going to bars and stuff. It's not like this, like, go out to bar and meet people. I guess maybe online, is that the big thing?
They go online, but what I discovered was a lot of times parents create accounts for their kids.
That's amazing.
Another very Jewish mom thing.
Yes, totally.
Like, do a jaded account.
So they're like, you know, there are moms who create platforms, who create like dating profiles for their daughters online, and they chat with men on their behalf. And
do they take a picture like when they're not looking, or they just use a picture they have?
No, they'll get a picture. Yeah, yeah. You know, they'll sort it out. They'll ask for a picture. Yeah. And then they'll say, you know, Sunday at 4, you have to go meet this guy.
So they chat with them, like they're online flirting with the guy, basically.
Yeah, they do. And they say ridiculous, like very old school things like, I want to be your right hand and your left shoulder, and I want to build a life with you. You know, like I've girls have passed along transcripts of these things, and it's hardly believable.
Does that scare, like, because I feel like an American man would be scared off on an online chat session if they were like talking about getting married, basically.
Probably. These are pretty local chatting platforms, and these women are, you know, their moms are chatting in Chinese, so you probably weed out the foreigners that way.
No, I just meant like as far as like the guys are, like, is it more normal, like, for the guys to just be thinking, like, I'm going to get married to this person, like, talk that way with having met yet?
No, I mean, probably not. I mean, people, you know, who are young enough these days probably want to try dating a little bit. It's a very new thing. I mean, that was one of the sort of roadblocks that I encountered. It was like, wait a minute, you know, why are there so many single people or so many single women? Okay, you look at the supply and things start to make a little bit more sense. But it became very clear that there isn't a dating culture, right? Like Turner said, people don't really, they're going out to bars more and more, but I would say that's still a pretty small percentage of you know, what young Chinese people do. So they'll either meet at school or, you know, workmates will say, oh, well, I've got a single friend, and they'll, you know, try to partner them off that way. It's still a very people to people kind of approach too.
Right. We need to
even like hobby, like sports teams. I guess that's becoming a thing a little bit, but like, you know, like outside of work hobbies, like church or whatever,
big deal.
That doesn't exist.
The
right.
Gym.
People aren't meeting at that. Being at the gym, maybe, but more like just playing on a rec league soccer co-ed team sports, or whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
Social things, outdoorsy stuff, exactly.
How do we
like
export
a volleyball-y
all of our rom coms and like TV shows about dating and all these things?
Oh,
with the
they're
pop
there.
Stars.
They have them all.
They haven't got ideas off these
Big
things.
Big Bang Theory was a really big hit.
True.
But they haven't thought, oh, we should try some of these. No.
Well, they mean like watch Big Bang Theory and then be like, let's start a volleyball league. I mean, like, you have to first of all create the system.
Right. Well, I've never seen Big Bang Theory. I didn't know that's a big part of it.
I don't know if it is either. But what I'm saying, like, it's easier said than
or just watch shows about, I don't know, getting drunk and hooking up. No. That idea? To have that idea? No.
And then go do that?
Yes, go do that.
Another thing you guys can teach.
I could teach a lot. But wait,
that'll be part of our class in the villages. Getting drunk and hooking up and volleyball.
Yes.
This clip of Big Bang Theory will teach us.
Big Bang Theory.
I like how we use that as an example when neither one of us have ever
seen the episode.
Nerds, that's all I know exists on that show.
It'd be great if we exported
so that. Then, yeah, I'm trying to think about how the people I don't know. How are they meeting? Basically work, right?
Yeah, work, friends, parents. I mean, parents still orchestrate blind dates. Siblings, if they have them. Friends, if they have them. Married colleagues will do it. Taxi drivers, sometimes they play a hand. I mean, everybody, you know.
Taxi drivers.
They're getting laid a lot, the taxi drivers.
They're matchmakers.
Yeah,
I mean,
taxi driver matchmaker is a great idea because you meet so many people. They overhear their conversations. So they know a lot about them.
Like... Shared rides.
A
great
$1 billion idea. Yeah.
Shared rides. I know a girl who was saying, like, you know, I took a shared car into work the other day and I met someone pretty cute. I think I'm going to keep doing it. Like,
that's
it's
a great idea.
You know how, like, Uber has
Uber
like,
pool.
Uber share,
exactly.
But they could
Uber date.
But Uber date. Yeah, yeah. That's give them this idea.
Guys,
where they could be
it's,
like,
it's Didi. Yeah. Uber has been killed by Didi.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it's all
yeah.
about the Didi. But you can do a shared ride.
Didi date. Didi date sounds even better.
Didi date. Yes.
Because you can then be like, share, and it's like, I want, I'm a man seeking woman, and you could do that. Put that all in. And see if you can get, it might take like an hour and a half for a car to show up. Like, she needs to be, like, here's my picture.
There are plenty of cars, but no men.
I've been waiting for 23 years. I can wait an extra hour and a half.
You're sober by the time a car shows up. Like, oh, I could drive now. I don't need this car, but
that's part of the class. We're like, but you're not allowed. Don't get sober. Classic mistake is getting sober in the hour and a half before the car shows up.
Yeah, those are ideas we could play with them.
I know you've been doing these interviews all over the place for this book. Has anyone been giving you this amount of ideas?
No, in terms of like business opportunities.
We're solving problems.
Didi date, I think, is a great idea.
Didi date.
Do the guys? So other guys have like? I mean, the problem has to work both ways too, right? Is there a term for men who are single? Or?
Yeah, it's guangun. It means bare branch.
Wait, I never even heard that.
Chinese are not subtle. Yeah. Guangun, it means bare branch, and it's in reference to the fact that these guys are unlikely to produce offshoots of their own.
Oh, that's just a...
it's a low blow.
It is, and it refers primarily to these guys that I was talking about in the countryside. You know,
we're going
to
help.
Barebranch.com.
Yeah. But there's also this PhD.
That could be so many things.
Yeah, that's a gay porn site. But you're also talking about they don't like the guys with the PhDs. They're dorks. And they don't like the guys out in the countryside.
No,
yeah, who do they like?
So women are very picky, it sounds like.
The PhD is just one example. I think there are plenty of women who are fine with PhDs. The guys in the countryside, it's not that they don't like them. It's just that they're probably not going to cross paths with them ever. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So these guys have a different problem. They're left over for different reasons because they're really poor and they're stuck on farms.
Right. And they all voted for Trump.
And they live in areas. There is a freakish parallel to the left behind men in the United States who voted for Trump. Absolutely. So they've got a different problem, right? There aren't women around them because any women who were born in those areas could maybe become a masseuse or a hostess and they could get out, whereas these men as sons were more stuck on farms. So these guys need to buy bribes from places like Vietnam or Thailand, and there's a system for them to be
able
to
work around.
Yeah, they have to bring them in. Yeah, they have to.
When you import the bride, do you then pretend, like, is there a whole song you pretend they're local, or you can't fool anybody, right?
The language would give it away.
Right, keep them inside for 2 years and be like, learn Chinese.
Oh, God.
And,
no. There's some pretty horrible stories.
I don't think it's, is it seen as worse to do that or not? I wouldn't think so.
No, it's just a solution. I mean, if you can't find a wife in China, well, you import one. That's kind of the deal.
That makes sense.
That'll be us one day.
Yeah.
I don't know. People have forgot to talk to people don't want to talk to each other in America. So one day people
That'll be Americans?
Yeah. Well,
that's true. When people stop going out of their house.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so this book's out and wait, you were saying that people are upset that you're not Chinese and you're writing about China?
Not everyone, but some people are like, what does a white woman know about China?
Oh gosh. Yeah, but you lived there for 5 years.
I did.
And so that
it still doesn't make me Chinese.
They say if you live in New York 5 years, you're a New Yorker. If you live in China 5 years, you're Chinese.
Yes, no? I agree.
I'm a Lao Beijing man at this point, yeah.
How's the reception been for the book?
The reception has been good, mixed. I mean, good stuff, bad stuff, a bunch of everything. In China, overall, it has been really good. A lot of young Chinese women or Chinese women here have really related to it. Some women who are Chinese who have lived here or grew up here said, this is insane. My parents moved here in 1985 and they still behave like the people in China. Like their timelines or their reference points for when someone should be married by haven't changed. Having lived in such a long time, I was really surprised. I did an event out in Bethesda, and it was about, I don't know, like 60 or 70 Chinese people in their 50s and 60s showed up, and they were really engaged. I mean, they asked tons of questions, and I was really surprised that the Chinese American community, and especially an older community, could be this interested. But I think they were curious to know what it was like for young people now, to just get a sense of how much China had changed and if it was anything like dating mores in the States are now and that kind of stuff. But it was surprised to see how many older people turned up to understand.
Yeah, that's cool. The idea of your like values changing, like I don't think it would happen for me the opposite way. If I had kids but I lived in China, I wouldn't be like, you have to get married at 23 because that's the local culture.
Right.
I would still have the American mindset, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, basically it would maybe be frozen in time, right? Whatever you left the U.S. with probably wouldn't evolve from there.
I mean, I could say, as someone who has kids, it's better to have kids younger in the sense that it's easier to, like, I imagine having energy when you're old. But, like, as far as...
Kaplan didn't do that. Just to catch you up. His kids are 5 and 3.
This is music to the ears of many Chinese moms.
Yeah, but... I think they don't know about like advances in medicine. Like, I feel like there used to be like,
oh man,
there used to be like a legitimate like health concerns because with like delivery and stuff. But now I feel like that's, I mean, you know, I was born, my mom was 26. So I was like, you know, I'm probably superior, I guess, to my siblings who are younger, based on this theory. But, I don't know. Like, I feel like everyone in New York's having kids in their 30s for the most part into their early 40s. So, and we're doing okay. I think these kids are... I mean, my son's a student of the month.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
And, you know, this month. And, you know, we kind of forced that.
We did force that.
On the pod.
We pressured them into it. What power of the pod. But yeah, we were in our 30s without saying any ages when he was born. So you should tell everyone that.
Well,
you could be a student of the month in New York City.
I actually spent this past Saturday at China's premier fertility clinic. Doing some research. And I was there. I was actually at a very controversial sperm bank. China's most controversial sperm
bank.
Wait,
how do these have sperm bank controversial?
What are they like? It's the sperm of criminals?
No.
We have Charles Manson sperm. It's very controversial.
This particular sperm bank made worldwide headlines last week. Because on its official, I bet you didn't expect you'd be getting this from me. On its official WeChat account, it posted the requirements for being a donor.
Okay.
And one of them was allegiance to the party.
Nice.
And so somebody picked up on this, and then of course 5,000 million other gajillion outlets picked up on it because it was an easy story, and they were like, "Communist sperm required at
I'm in favor of that. Why can't you pick? I mean, like, you get to pick everything else, right? Like, it's if you're gonna pick what like your kid's gonna be.
I'm sure like a lot of people aren't like, "Well, I'm gonna take like was." Did you vote for Trump? Get back to that or something? People care about politics when they.
I bet you Americans do the same thing,
but they have a choice.
Yes,
the people have a choice. The bank doesn't make the choice.
Yeah, the bank. So the bank is filtering out anyone who doesn't believe in.
But
the
it's
party.
A private company, right? The bank.
No, it's actually state run.
Oh,
so it's part of.
Oh, well, that
it's
makes
like
even more.
But China's premier
loyalty
China's
to the
part.
But then you're going to raise a country without any independence. Like you want, like to at least be some. Something in you that could.
Now you're
is
catching
this
on, Kaplan.
Hereditary, really? I mean,
that's what I was going to say. First of all, it's not hereditary.
I'm not sure
well, they're saying
proven.
It is. I don't know.
I mean, it was like a big thing in the news, and it kind of disappeared, and you know, it blew up to sort of the implication that all sperm banks in China were requiring this, which is not true.
That's what
it was
every
just,
story about China
yes,
makes it seem like all of China does right. whatever this one
all
thing is.
All the time.
That's why whenever, as much as possible, I like to be like, oh, I just got a coffee down the street. It was great. I love America.
Exactly.
Like, just that's representative. That's what people do with China.
All the time.
They think that this one experience they had just means the whole country.
Especially if it's something that could blow out of proportion.
And you're
like
talking
this.
About 1.5 billion people.
Yeah.
So then,
and a whole lot of potential sperm donors.
Yeah. Are the other sperm banks like using this to be like, these are the rebel sperm banks?
No, not at all. I mean, I think they were quite embarrassed by it, and they pulled down the post. And, you know, I actually walked past the department, and I just saw two young men looking rather nervous. They were going to get 5,000. I think it was 5,500 kwai for it. So it was a pretty decent amount
of money.
What's
that exchange rate?
That's like $800.
Yeah.
$800. And, you know, yeah, that's a good deal.
Maybe a little bit more.
But they were.
Wait, are they allowed?
Well,
I'll be loyal to.
I couldn't see it in their eyes. I'm
willing to swear allegiance to the party for $800.
Yeah,
Do they allow Jews though? Like, what's the, is there a height requirement?
You must be communist. Yeah. We also accept.
We've
you.
Said this before, but I think Jews are really respected in China.
Yeah,
so maybe
well, most of us are communists.
Thought it was a smart. Rich
well,
people.
They think you're all wealthy. So
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that.
And we love the food.
Yeah.
We can make okay.
This
donate.
Is actually wait. This
I need
is
more
a
kids
idea.
That I don't have to raise though.
Why don't we start a company where we get Jewish guys who can't get married here to go to China and marry Chinese women? I feel like Chinese families would be happy with a Jewish husband.
Yeah, I'm not sure the Jewish family is going to be thrilled, but you know.
No, but they also don't have. I met a girl when I was in China who, when I first went there, we were all in the same like teaching course, and they asked everyone like, "You went around the room, it was like, why did you move here?" And she said, "Because I'm Jewish." And I can't find a guy in America, but I know that Chinese people don't have religion, they're the easiest ones to convert.
Yes,
holy
shit! She just straight up said it.
They're the only ones who can convert.
Yeah.
Nobody's choosing Jewish over Christmas, but you know, they might choose it over nothing.
Over nothing.
Yeah,
right.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of women in the Hasidic communities who are having a hard time finding finding mates. Maybe that
sounds like your next book idea.
Well, no, I'm saying it sounds like your next business venture. Ooh. You can, you know.
Oh, after we get out to these villages,
yeah,
we got a lot on our plate.
We might need to hire some
China
people.
And
we
got babies.
DD date.
Working on
DD date.
You need to get working on.
We could do a Hasidic version of that.
There.
The car can only go under an Erev. I'm getting very specific.
Wait, but then the Chinese guys can't grow the beard, so.
Oh, well, you can buy them on Taobao. It's no big deal.
That's true.
Yeah. They can, yeah, it's not like you have to. If you can't grow facial hair, it's not like.
Oh, that's not a requirement?
Are you sure?
Oh.
Well, I mean, they do it because they can. I mean, if they couldn't do it, right. I don't know.
You don't get kicked out?
You don't get kicked out.
Okay, so now do you live in Cuba?
Wait, what? Good segue.
That had run its course.
Yeah. No, I live in New York City and I travel to Cuba very often because I'm a Cuba correspondent.
Oh, you travel there. Okay.
Yeah.
How long have you been traveling there?
This has been my beat since August.
The beat for The Economist.
Yeah.
So is this is this because of your experience with communist governments that you also, is there any link between China and Cuba?
There is tons of investment, in fact. Yeah, I speak Spanish, but there's also a lot of investment. I mean, I just became curious in Cuba because in 2015, when I first started sort of keeping my eye on it, it felt like 2015 is when diplomatic relations were reestablished between Cuba and China. So Cuba and the United States, and same thing, right?
Yeah.
They've always been good with China.
Economically, yes, same thing.
And in many ways, it felt like 1979 China, right? You had American companies that were kind of licking their lips, waiting to get into Cuba, and you had a government that we thought was maybe on the verge of economic reform, so you're going to be shedding this centrally planned sort of, you know, communist economy, and it was going to become something else. We all knew it wasn't going to be China. Was it going to become Vietnam? Was it going to be a different place? It just seemed like, you know, I could be able to sort of travel back in time and see what China was like in 1979 through Cuba. And that's what first got my eye. Obviously, that's not been true. Cuba is still a very much a centrally planned government.
Oh, it didn't open up.
No, not at all. Not. I mean, it opened up a little bit, but not nearly like China did. But it was, that's kind of, you know, that was what first got me interested. And it's a fascinating place, and it's so different from China in so many levels. I mean, you go from 1.3 billion people and no sunshine to, you know, 11 million and constant reggaeton and more sun and rum than you could probably find anywhere else. And yet a whole lot of Chinese investment.
So, there is Chinese investment.
A ton, yeah.
In what? In what? What are they investing in?
They're doing a lot. They're doing a lot. They do a lot in a bunch of different things. So, renewable energy is one, but the tourism one is kind of fun. So, right now, there's some big Chinese companies there looking to build golf courses and hotels with sort of the eye to getting direct flights from China to Havana.
I look at China's going to gentrify Cuba.
I know. I find that very exciting.
Oh, I find it terrifying. Cuba, but
they're going to put in like...
I love how golf courses. That's. I mean, I thought golf was the enemy of communism.
Yeah. Well, Fidel used to golf.
Fidel did.
But also, Fidel outlawed golf, didn't he?
He did.
He was a bit of a hypocrite on a few things.
He was very hypocritical.
He outlawed it for the people.
He loved to scuba dive. I mean, not exactly.
He didn't outlaw scuba diving.
No, he did not.
Okay, good. That would have been a step too far.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to outlaw scuba diving.
They're underwater. You can't see them.
Talk to the fish.
Yeah. So yeah, outlaw golf. Okay, yeah. And then China, I know, has tried, not, they haven't tried to outlaw golf, but I used to play golf in China, and they would, every once in a while, they would blame golf for certain things.
Such as broken windows or?
No, like the land and the water, and it takes up too much space. It's not for the people.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
But when you go to a golf course, it was all government officials.
I mean, China's kind of, I think, has enough land, no?
What?
China seems like a place with enough land you can actually build some
golf. Yeah, they got
like Cuba's a little smaller.
Well, but it's got a lot of uninhabited, totally, you know.
Yeah.
So there is space to do this.
Right. Well, it's only 11 million people, you
said. And the U.S. isn't going to do it. So I think as soon as Trump was elected, China was like, all right,
but
this is
all for us. But wait, Trump might change his mind on this whole Cuba policy if you talk about the golf course.
It's true.
He can put some beautiful Trump golf courses down there.
Sorry. He's too late.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
No, he was too late. When he was trying to please Marco Rubio,
he pleased the Florida.
Little Marco.
He pleased little Marco and the Florida voters, but he lost out on a golf course opportunity.
Exactly.
So do you feel like Hemingway when you're there? Where did you stay at?
Just like him. I drink, I get violent, I beat people.
Nice. You fish.
Yeah, I fish. I go swimming. Yeah, yeah. No, not quite like Hemingway, but it's definitely, I love going.
Are you
down
welcome
there
as a journalist there or not?
I mean, it's not stamped on my forehead, right? So I've never had any issues.
The minders, how far back do they Cuba distance these
the
days,
miners are a lot friendlier in Cuba than they are in China.
Oh, look at
I
that.
I mean, you know, if you're doing something that they're a little bit questionable of, they'll say, hey, you know, what's this? What's going on? They'll maybe invite you to have a coffee. They're not nearly as intrusive as they are in China. Although I don't have tons of experience with miners in China. But
I was going to ask.
Yeah, no, I don't. But from, you know, from I've spent time with friends who have miners, so we've been followed. And it's like we're buying, you know, towels in the basement of, you know, some supermarket. Like, we're doing silly things, you know, and the miners are following us. And it's kind of like, this is absurd.
That has to be the most boring job on earth. You just walk around with a journalist?
Yeah, you kind of follow them. You keep tabs on them.
I don't think I ever had one, but they weren't checking out ice cream salesmen.
We weren't that important.
yeah.
They weren't following us. But no, in Cuba, they're way more, you know, in my experience, they're way more low-key about it. And yeah, overall, I mean, I speak Spanish, and my mom is actually from the same region as Fidel Castro's dad. So I guess that
talking
gives me
point.
A bit of cred.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, eres española. They make fun of my accent because I've got the Castilian th,
which
essentially makes me sound like I have a lisp. Barcelona. And everyone in Cuba has got a grandfather from my mom's region. You know, they're like, oh, española, ¿de dónde? You know, like, where are you from in Spain? You say Galicia, and they say, oh, my grandfather. Everyone's got a grandfather.
Nice.
So it's,
the old country.
The old country.
The old country. Exactly.
Fantastic. Okay, well, so where can people find you, and where can they find the book?
Yeah.
Where can they find me? Well, somewhere between New York and Havana these days, mainly. And the book's everywhere. Online, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, anywhere good books are sold.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Roseanne, thanks for doing the podcast.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right, Cap.
That was fun.
We get to the news?
I guess we'll see. Yeah.
All right.
Let's find out what's going on the website, Spurbanks.
Play the music. Kaplan, first of all, thank you to our guest, Roseanne Lake. She's very busy. She had to take off. Thanks to her for being on. But Kaplan, you're on the phone right now, and I'm going to explain why.
Yeah, she took off a while ago. Let's just say that. Let's just clue the audience in on what's going on here.
Exactly. So what happened is we recorded the news once she took off, and then I lost the recording, and now it's late night. I'm at home. Cap, you're at home. We're doing this for the people. We decided we're not going to let the news go. How else are people supposed to get their news if we don't give it to them once a week?
Yeah, you know, they say in the business, they say the news never sleeps, right?
Exactly.
So we owe it to, we can't just say no news 1 week.
No, because then
we can't.
People rely on us.
Yeah, they do. They do. We are like the way John Stewart used to be in the old
days. It's like how, you know, millennial, or like our generation when we were younger used to get our news from John Stewart. We wouldn't watch CNN. People now, these alt middles now, they don't watch any TV. They just get their news
from
us.
The alt middle, they don't.
They get it from us once
a week. I've read a lot of trend stories on how the alt middle doesn't get the news from any other source.
Exactly. First news story of the week, Kaplan. This comes to us from the New York Post, which is a reliable source. Target customers, I think we're talking about the superstore here. Target customers in several states are discovering white supremacist propaganda with the phrase, "it's okay to be white," in quotation marks, "it's okay to be white," tucked inside their boxes of Pampers and Up and Up diapers. Yes, according to the Anti-Defamation League. So it's on a card. Like, they're getting this card. It's inside of their Pampers and their Up and Up diapers. There's this card saying it's okay to be white. If you flip the card over, it says, it lists a bunch of the white supremacist websites, including
so it's not like a subtle thing. It's okay to be white, and I'll just let you think about it for a little bit.
No,
marinate on that. It's like, we're now turn over, and so it's like a fortune cookie, sort of like a racist fortune cookie thing.
It's like an evil fortune cookie.
Oh my god,
it's like a hate filled fortune cookie.
And can you leave it in the diaper so that if you want to protest it, your baby can poop on it, or will it be uncomfortable for the baby?
No, I think that's a good idea. I think that's probably the best thing to do with it. I mean, I guess you could burn it. I don't know. Here's what I have to say about this. That this is, listen, we're alt middle, right? But sometimes when you're alt middle, you have to agree with the right, and sometimes you have to agree with the left. We never agree with these white supremacists. That's not where I'm going. But we kind of have to agree with the Hillary Clinton left on this one. Hillary did not want to employ white underclass white Americans.
I don't know where you're going.
Right? She did not want to give them jobs. And maybe she didn't want to give them, and so then therefore the underclass white Americans all elected Donald Trump. Maybe she didn't want to get them jobs because she knew if they got a job, they go to work in a factory, they become alt-right, they become these crazy racists, and then they'd put these things into Pampers, and then it'd ruin mom's days across the United States of these United States of America.
I love this take. You're giving Hillary Clinton like so much credit for like being all powerful economic policy was going to have.
Exactly.
She was going to actually physically keep Donald Trump voter types from getting jobs. That was her plan.
It seemed to me like they were all racist
and deplorable. I get it. That's a great theory.
Yeah, she knew. When she called them deplorable, this is exactly what she was talking about.
Right. This is why we can't have things made in America, because we are racist against things like the people in factories around the world could be racist, but they're racist against people by them, so we don't care.
Wait,
if
I don't
put
think
a message,
No.
If they put a message in that says Bengalis are lazy, what who cares, right? It's not as offensive to a
Yeah, I don't but. Care. I also don't know of that ever happening before. I don't think people have
no,
I know there is you're half right. Like there is a history of people who work in factories around the world putting messages like you have a message in a bottle and you throw it in the ocean. They're putting a message into Pampers and whoever gets it on the other side. But usually it's like they're throwing something into an iPhone that says like, I'm a slave in the Apple factory, please help, you know? But these factory workers in America are just, I guess they're unhappy with other races. And so
they're my wife is a designer and you know, they have these factories in India. Maybe I can. We want to get any messages about the podcast. We can like have them slipped into like these sheeting packages, and then
great idea.
Maybe we can get like some listeners, or we could put like our cards or something.
We could put our website.
Yes, we need to expand.
LostInAmericaPod.com. Just slip it into.
We should say it's okay to be. It's okay to pod, or it's okay to watch. I don't know.
It's okay to be the alt middle.
It's okay to be alt middle. Yes.
Exactly. That's it. So, okay, you know, that's what you get. That's what Hillary warned us, and now it's happening.
Hillary warned us that we can't trust these. Are you actually giving Trump credit for bringing the diaper jobs back to America? Like, are you saying that
I'm saying that I'm not giving anyone credit, but I am saying that this problem did not exist before Trump was there.
Right. He, by decree, made all these diaper factories wherever they're making diapers. Apparently, you're saying they're making them in America, you think they'd be, I guess they're emboldened by Trump, yeah.
Kaplan, if there's one thing I've learned with this podcast, is that when we do the news at the end of a very long episode and the guest is still not on the episode, no one's listening, so I can say whatever I want.
I like it. Great theory.
Last news story of the week comes to us from the Shanghaiest. Kaplan, our old friends at the Shanghaiest, swarms of jellyfish are teeming in the waters off of the coast of China, particularly in the Yellow Sea, and they are proving to be a nuisance for Chinese warships. So here's what's happening. These jellyfish, there's so many jellyfish in the Yellow Sea, they're being sucked into the ship systems, they're clogging up the pipes, and they're causing the ships to overheat. Now, to address this issue, Chinese researchers are currently working on a so-called jellyfish shredder. That is a massive net with sharp blades that is towed along by a boat, bringing jellyfish to the surface before slicing them up into a bunch of tiny pieces, which no longer pose a threat to the Chinese warships. What do we think about this?
And what happens to the pieces they chop up? Do they?
I think they just
see where they can sting you, or they're
well. No, they're dead. I don't think they can sting once they're dead.
Well, they can't sting post death. Oh,
exactly. So they just kind of create a little cake type thing on the top of the ocean, and maybe they end up in that garbage pile in the middle of the Atlantic or something. I'm not sure.
And whatever fish, sharks, or whatever eat jellyfish, then they can get like we're making it easier for them. We're cutting up the little pieces for them, so that's very nice of us.
Exactly. I mean, I'm in favor. I have two minds on this. First of all, I would say that I know Donald Trump, we're in this arms race right now. He's building up our military, billions and billions of dollars to try to stop the Chinese. Turns out all you have to do, get a couple of jellyfish.
Right. If we could get like, if we could clone or just make breed jellyfish here and then just like bring them over.
Dump them in the Yellow Sea.
Mission and just jump like, cause, you know, shredders to shred paper. They can get overheated if you put too much paper in the shredder, right?
Now we're thinking.
So
I'm sure the jellyfish shredder can get overheated.
Yeah, I'm sure the technology is not that advanced yet. So if we can just overload them with jellyfish into the South China Sea, we can just crush China. And, you know, then we wouldn't need all these tariffs and everything because we would win.
Exactly.
We'd be back to winning.
That whole
we get this idea.
We'll be so sick of winning.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, I just don't want it to backfire, you know, like this unintended consequences. Cause if we create like a, like extra jellyfish into the ocean, like I don't want them coming back here. Cause are you like, have you ever been stung by jellyfish?
No, but I'm wildly scared of being stung by a jellyfish. That's why I'm kind of on the Chinese side on this. Cause I want less jellyfish in the world, not more.
Yeah. I might be, you're right.
I don't like jellyfish too. They don't even taste good. If you're gonna eat
I'm like, I've never been stung, but I'm like irrationally terrified every time I go in the water. I'm like looking at them. I'm like very nervous because I'm like always panicked about the idea of like crying like a baby in public.
Yes.
You know, and I don't know how much pain it is when you get stung, but I just feel like the shock of it happening when I'm not ready, I'm just going to lose it. So it's like, you know, it's like a shark attack, which would be cool. You'd be the news. You'd be a hero if you survive it. You know,
yes, I see what you're saying. Good,
then you got to ask a stranger to pee on you or something. Or your kids. I mean, I guess my kids would probably love it that just to pee on daddy, but.
I see what you're saying. If you're on the beach and you get attacked by a shark, everyone is familiar with the concept of a shark attack. You get this big bite out of you. People are like, rush them to the hospital, rush them to the hospital. If you get attacked by a jellyfish and you go, my foot stings. No one can see that. They go, walk it off, you pansy.
Yeah, or they whip out they just piss on you. It's because everyone knows that that's what apparently cures jellyfish stings, right?
Yes.
Is that true? Did I make that up? I think your brother told me that once. He got pee.
No, I think that's right. That checks out. Yeah. That's correct.
So we should let I think we both agree. We're not going to – let's not talk to our friends in the Pentagon. Let's let the Chinese take care of this problem.
I would say good people on both sides. It's hard. Yeah, it's hard for me to take a side on this one. Both teams played hard.
Yeah, it's just like the diaper manufacturing. Oh, wait, never mind.
I took a side on that for sure. All right, Kaplan, that's it. Look at that. We did this.
I feel like we're really working hard doing bonus news like hours after we record. We should do this every week. Just forget the news.
Forget the news. Do it over the phone. We're better over the phone. All right.
Yeah.
That's it. Kaplan, what should we do finally?
I am going to go and get lost.
$6 in my hand, up to Lexington, 125, feel sick and dirty, more dead than alive, I'm waiting for my man, hey white boy, what you doing? Boy, you chasing all women around. Oh, pardon me, sir, it's furthest from my mind. I'm just looking forward to a dear friend of mine. I'm waiting for my man. He comes, he's all dressed in.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.